Thank you very much, Sherry. Go ahead, please.
Hey, my name's Sherry. I'm a woman in recovery, addict, recovering addict. I've been calling myself some variety of addict since 2008. And so it wasn't until about 2 or 3 years ago I started identifying as a woman in recovery. I like it. I heard other people do it. So I wanted to try that little shoe on. It fits really well. It's pretty comfortable. It's a good exercise in personal autonomy. And in a place where for so long I didn't have, and not just in early years of Narcotics Anonymous, but before Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't have those, that capability to practice personal autonomy. What was going to happen to my body and what was going to happen to my mind. So I like doing that, and I kind of like going against the grain at times too. But I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous in, oh, geez, I don't know. I'm 40 now, and I would have been about 14 years old when a psychologist handed me an NA meeting schedule. I remember. I think the Serenity Prayer was on. I don't look at those much anymore because now I'm all online. But I think the Serenity Prayer was on them, and a lot of God stuff. A lot of the meetings were named after God, and that was in Lima, Ohio. That was in Lima, Ohio. So my first impression was, well, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in God, so I'm not going to belong here. I'm not going to belong there. I can't go. I don't want to go. I don't think I really had, I mean, I definitely was using substances. I was definitely using substances, but at that time, there was no way, there was really no logical or rational way for me to identify myself as an addict. It just wasn't even possible yet. So, trying to think that, well, I should have been there, I should have known better, beating the shit out of myself because I was some kind of. I don't know. Sometimes I just hear people in meetings really trash themselves for not knowing something that there's no fucking way I could have known. It was way too early, But so it would have been some years before I found myself in my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. It would have been in 2008, when I showed up at my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting for myself. And I'd been to NA meetings before, but that was for everybody. They had problems. I didn't have problems. They had problems. So finally, I showed up for me one day, and I was running from some legal issues. I knew that the crime I committed had about there was a statute of limitations on the crime I committed. So I ran to the rooms. I did all the things I thought I was supposed to do. I started 90 meetings in 90 days. I got a sponsor. I was reading literature. I was chairing meetings. I was making coffee, cleaning up cigarette butts. And it was a transitional house. It was a transitional house. I was living, and I was also living in a women's shelter. Had a sponsor, doing all the model 12-step stuff, gotta meet the 12-step status quo. And the homeless shelter I was living at mandated us to go to a church service every Sunday, or we couldn't live in this homeless shelter. So highly fucking unconstitutional, if you ask me. But so, I did that, and I tried to act as if. Fake it till you make it, act as if. Well, I ended up in a psychiatric hospital. I ended up on the psychiatric floor. That's what happened to me when I was, trying to fake it until I made it and do all these things that, everybody was clapping for. Oh, you believe in God. Oh, you have a higher power. Good for you. You picked it. You assigned something to yourself. So now you are complete and you can go on. But I was out of my fucking mind. And that shit just made it 1,000 times worse. So I relapsed. I think I had like 60 days clean, and after being in the psych unit, I relapsed. But I don't really talk much about my active addiction. I can say that when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I came with a lot of trauma, a lot of trauma, a criminal history, and I don't really have to relive it. I only had to live it one time. Nobody can make me go back there. So I'm just not going to. I can identify with the newcomer. I can identify with people who are still using drugs, but I really don't want to glamorize or glorify or get into the horror stories and stuff. I use drugs. I'm a recovering addict. And I did, if I start thinking that I couldn't do the things that other people did in their addiction, that's my yet. That's what I've always been told. And I really believe that. If I sit around and say, I would never do that. I could never do that. Not even if I was on drugs. That's my yet. I have to be able to identify not only with being an addict, but also being a human being. So, anyways, I came back after that relapse. I came back for a little while. I think maybe I got another 30 or 60 or 90 days or something, and I relapsed again. The crime I committed was past the statute of limitations by then. So I figured, I'm out of here, So I went back to using my relapse, which it was just like they said it was going to be, though. It was worse. It was so much worse. And I started doing all the things that I said that I was never going to do. And yeah, this time it was a lot bigger consequences. I had a lot bigger health consequences, and legal consequences with that relapse. And it started with alcohol. All my relapses started with alcohol, every single one of them. But the first two, there ended up being more drugs than just the alcohol. And we know alcohol is a drug. So I ended up living the program behind the walls. For 4 years, I had a sponsor, and I did again. I was doing all the model inmate things. I was doing all the things that I thought they wanted me to do to get whatever I wanted, and that was, just to get the fuck out of there. I just wanted out. But prison was one of the most serene places for me. I have never reached that level of peace and serenity, and I don't think I ever will in my life. I was more free in prison than I've ever been, which is actually pretty fucking sad. But so, yeah, we talk about old people, places, and things, right? And so I don't think it's always so black and white and simple because I had had a lot of treatment. I had had so much treatment in prison. And then I'm a human trafficking survivor, and I would have been. It wasn't a conscious choice to go back to old people, places, and things. What had been so, how much I had been brainwashed by abusers, I didn't even know at that point in time they were my abusers. So I went right back to them after I got out of prison. And but I stayed clean for 8.5 years. I stayed clean. I stayed clean and I got in a relationship way too early, had a kid in the first year. I was in a hurry, and it wasn't so much that I wanted to be in that relationship. It was that I knew that my health was failing and the clock was ticking and I wanted to have a child. So I had a child in my first year. And again, I had a sponsor. I was working in Living Steps, the best of my ability, whatever that was at that time. I was doing service, going to meetings. I hadn't found secular yet. I was on my way. And I don't know how many rounds of steps I worked before I found secular. I think that's really important and how I was working in Living Steps. But my first sponsor was a prostitute, and she was an ex-prostitute and a drug dealer at the time that I was working steps with her. So, at first I was working with the bottom of the barrel, definitely the bottom of the barrel, just, was desperate. It was an emergency, needed and wanted to do this thing as quickly as I could. So, we worked out the first round of steps I worked out of was a back to basics guide that was written by a lady in the East Coast. Her name was Antoinette something or another. And it's not conference approved literature, but that literature was created because there was so much brain damage in addicts on the East Coast, and we were struggling with the Green and Gold Guide because it's pretty complex. That Green and Gold Guide is complex, aside from the fact that like every three words is God, but yeah, so that was nice. I needed that. And then we went on to the Green and Gold Guide, and I did that. And I think that, at that time, I was still very confused about spirituality and what it meant to me, and how it my place with it and relevance to other people as well, which I'm not really going to get too much into, but the way that I was working and living steps evolved over time. And it's definitely been a process of coming home to myself. So I see the timer too, but so I worked with her for a while until, there were things I guess we say we outgrow people, right? I don't have to go into detail, but I definitely outgrew her at some point in time. And the child of my the fa I'm sorry, the father of my child relapsed when I was, I think I would have been about 6 years clean and recovering at the time, and I was 6 months pregnant at the time. He relapsed on my last drug of choice. So that was extremely fucking difficult. And I could, punish myself for it. I could shame myself for it. I could, sit in here and talk about how we shouldn't be in relationships in our first year of recovery, but I don't regret it. I don't regret it. I don't, not at all. So yeah, I definitely wouldn't recommend anyone to have a child in the first year of recovery though. So not saying that. My next sponsor I worked with briefly, and this was right around the time I was getting close to coming to Secular Narcotics Anonymous. I had to stop going to meetings in Lima, Ohio. And there was just too many of my abusers there. My son's dad was there, and I was going to meetings all online. So this sponsor didn't like that. And she decided she was going to scream and yell about that on the phone. So she's no longer sponsoring me. And that's not the first time I've dealt with that. There's been a series of those kinds of things happen in the past, I don't know, fucking 5, 10 years or something like that. So I don't tolerate that. I don't the talking down to, the berating, the belittling, all that fucking, the insults, the like, go fuck yourself. Okay. There's no little eyes or, big me's or little eyes or whatever the fuck. That's the no, I don't. And it's so common. It's so common for sponsors to be abusing their sponsees and for sponsees to be wanting to hang on to these relationships just to say, I have a sponsor. No fucking way. Yeah, my next sponsor was an atheist. I started going to an agnostic meeting, a global agnostic meeting, and he sponsored me for, oh shit, I don't know how many years, maybe 3 years. He was an atheist, and he was the best sponsor I ever had. I chaired that meeting for a year or two, something like that. And I think those were some of the happiest years of my life. I really think they were. I was able to stay out of relationships and, sex and all that for over a year. And I started to entertain other 12-step fellowships at that time. And yeah, and that's when I really started, coming home with being an atheist and being comfortable with it. Not really questioning what other people wanted me to do so much, or thinking that I had to believe in God to recover, because I still believe that for a really long time. So, but I did end up relapsing. I relapsed with 8.5 years. It's kind of a long story about, misfortune and not having enough to eat, not getting enough sleep, not getting all the things that I needed, and having a lot of vulnerabilities, not having the resources that I needed at the time, and being surrounded by a whole lot of people who wanted to take advantage of me. So I relapsed, and I relapsed on alcohol. My liver was enlarged, and I'll tell you this, I'll tell you that I got one good drunken after 8.5 years, but after that, it was nothing but sickness. I couldn't get drunk, I couldn't enjoy it, and it wasn't because I had a head full of recovery. I was just fucking sick. I couldn't get drunk. It didn't matter how much I drank. So my liver became enlarged. I put the alcohol right back down. I stayed out of Narcotics Anonymous for a year and tried to stay clean on my own. And then I used one last time. I was crazy. I was out of my fucking mind. I was clean, but I was out of my mind. And I relapsed one last time, July 17th, 2020. I drank a bottle of wine. I haven't used since. It took me about 2 months to come back to NA, and I'd been going to secular since I started going in 2014, 2014, 2000, 2016. I started coming to secular. It was 2016 or 17. I started coming to secular meetings. So this time I came back to secular. Nothing but secular mostly. I did 90 and 90 in secular meetings, which I'd done before. I tried to work with sponsors, but it just there's fucking too much trauma. Nothing was a good fit. I watched Rose die. That was not fun. She was my sponsor. So yeah. But I worked the steps with the male sponsor one last time after coming back, and I've just stayed. I just keep coming to meetings. Sometimes I might have to go to a other 12-step fellowships, or I might have to go to other recovery groups and stuff like that, and that's outside help. It's not an outside issue, it's outside help, and I need that. I need that. I very much need that. If I didn't have those things to reinforce my recovery in Narcotics Anonymous, I wouldn't be in Narcotics Anonymous. I wouldn't be here sitting in this chair talking right now. But so yeah, I try to stay connected best I can, and I reach out to, I don't reach out to everybody, and everybody doesn't reach out to me, and that's okay. I try not to take that shit personal. I have two sponsees in this fellowship right now, and I don't have a sponsor, and they're very well aware that I don't work with sponsors. I have standards, and that's okay. I know that traditionally, a sponsor is someone that has a sponsor who's worked steps, and they've worked steps, and so on and so forth, and all, but I don't fucking care. I'm not sorry, and I don't care. So, but as far as the reality of living the steps in my life, it's pretty simple. I could break it down like a million different ways, 1 through 12, right? If anybody didn't hear it in my share already, but step one, I have a problem, whatever it is, whatever you want to call it, substance abuse disorder, addiction. Addiction's an umbrella term. It's just an umbrella term for all this shit. And but step two, I need help. I can't do it by myself. I'll always need help, no matter how much time I have or whatever. Step three is, making a decision for right living. Step four is, making an inventory on past and sometimes, more present things, what's happened in my life. Then there's amends and changing, more change, and continue to take an inventory, prayer, meditation, all that bullshit. I used to have all the steps 1 through 12 memorized. Like I could read the original ones and I knew everyone word for word. And I thought that meant something. I thought that meant that I was like I graduated from Narcotics Anonymous College or something, and I had it all figured out. But I found that sometimes the people that sound the most messy or they don't make sense make the most sense to me. The people who aren't so concerned with looking just so or just perfect or so eloquent and well-spoken. Like I love messy people. I love people who like to color outside the lines. I love people who aren't afraid to look dumb. I love people who aren't afraid to look like they aren't recovering. I admire those people probably the most, and that's really hard to come by for me. But I love Narcotics Anonymous. I can't get what I get here anywhere else. And I'm not one of those people that feels like I have to pledge my allegiance to Narcotics Anonymous. I actually like I can get pretty judgy when I hear people doing that stuff, But when I find myself going to other recovery groups, it doesn't, it's like putting on something that doesn't fit. And then I find my way back here because the steps have become a life, it's become a life, it is a lifestyle. It's not just, here's my life and here's my recovery. It's a way of life. It's a way of living. It's an everyday order, and we could be anywhere in the steps at any given time. And one of my sponsors used to say something to me every time I called her. She'd say, "Just put a step on it. Just put a step on it. Just pick any fucking step and put one on it, And I love that. I love that. I can still hear the people that played such a significant role in my life in my head. I'm not schizophrenic or anything, but they become part of my conscience. You all have become part of my conscience all day, every day. I can hear things you've said, and sometimes before I make decisions, and it's shaped my character over time. And when I go to bed at night and I have to think about, what did I do today? How did I contribute to society today? Because I'm disabled. I'm so fucked up. I'm disabled. There's not a lot I can do, and I do society a really big favor by not working. I do society a really big favor by not using drugs, not being out there committing crimes. And I do this fellowship a favor when I don't commit to service positions that I cannot perform. I would love to. I would absolutely love to. But it's just not, I'm just not capable of doing absolutely everything that I want to do. Willingness and ability are two very separate things. But so I'm just celebrated 5 years clean and recovering July 17th. And that's thanks to this fellowship. I love you all, and that's all I have.